We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
The Zone is presented by Guarantee Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, we continue hanging out on this Monday edition of The Zone. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels. We'll talk with Josh Kizer coming up at noon. Some Royals discussion with Josh Kizer. They get ready for the Toronto Blue Jays, a four-game set starting tonight, heading until Thursday, a little getaway day on Thursday. And then they, like everybody else, they will be heading to Detroit. All eyes will be on Detroit on Thursday night as the draft takes place there, and the Chiefs with the last pick in the first round. It's simultaneously not ideal and ideal. It's great. It's the best position to draft in, except for draft night.
You know what would be even worse? 30.
Oh, 30 or 30. Yeah, 30. 30 is the worst. You're right, because then you don't even win your conference.
29 and 30. Yep. 29 and 30 are the two worst spots.
You're right about that. Yeah. 30 is no bueno. 30's not great. And they drafted 30 with Karlaftis, right? Karlaftis was 30 because that was their original pick, and then the Dolphins pick is what they traded up with Trent McDuffie to get him at 21. So they have had that, and that sucked. That was not fun. But they have been picking in the 30s for a while, the Chiefs have, so they've got the, at the same time, worst and best pick in the NFL draft. And we'll see what happens with quarterbacks, et cetera, that'll take place in the top four, top five picks, and you know, if McCarthy goes number four, if a team really wants McCarthy and he doesn't go in the top four, and then they trade with the Chargers or whatever, or he's sitting there at number five, and does Harbaugh, can he contain himself? All right, I'm trading Herbert so I can get McCarthy. Does he dare take Marvin Harrison Jr., that Michigan man, take the Ohio State receiver? Oh, there's so many different storylines at number five. I can't wait. So that's Thursday night. The Chiefs will be picking.
My birthday.
Oh, really?
Come on, yeah.
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah, there's so many storylines.
There's a ton of storylines.
A ton of storylines.
The quarterbacks, the tackles, the wide receivers, the Chiefs draft, Sterling's birthday. Royals are wrapping up against the Blue Jays that day. Then they head on the road to face off against the Tigers, a team that currently is a game behind them in the stand. All of those are massive, massive storylines on Thursday.
Huge.
Huge, quickly. Huge. Quickly, let's hear from Brett Veach. We heard the press conference live on Friday, but there are some things to talk about, discuss, react to with Brett Veach. And let's just go ahead and do the crazy thing and start with clip number one. With Brett Veach, he talks about the offensive tackles, the wide receivers. I think there are a few things here that I was able to glean from listening to Brett Veach. In these different clips we'll play, but here he is talking about the offensive tackle and the wide receiver value that's in this particular draft.
I think the draft in general has some positional depth, although it is funny when we're looking at the numbers and the general consensus is this is a deep O-line class or this is a deep D-line class or what have you. It's not necessarily true for us, I think, sometimes, because like for the tackle position, I think once you get past like pick 35 or 40, most of those guys are gone. So if you're picking in the top 10, it's a great offensive line class. If you're picking in the top 15, it's a great offensive line class. If you're picking 32 and 64, you got a shot maybe here or there. So I think that goes into, you know, the additional work we put in and putting a strategy together and what guys might be worth a move, depending on how it all plays out and, you know, what other positions are going to provide top end value if say an O lineman or receiver isn't there, and you know, do you go corner, do you go defensive line? I think that there are some interesting pockets there. So I think the good thing is that, like every year, there's a lot of good players, and it's just a matter of working on our board, our system, given the picks we have and the, you know, the potential moves we can make.
Okay, so there's a lot there. I think there's a lot there from Brett Veach in that particular clip. He talked about the tackle position, which tackle and wide receiver, so much of our conversation has gone about that. And then, you know, where would they go if it's not tackle or wide receiver? He mentioned specifically two other positions, cornerback, defensive line. Like, if it's not a tackle or wide receiver, cornerback, defensive line, et cetera. But for him to talk about the tackle position, like people talk about, it's a really deep tackle position that, you know, but once you get past 35 or 40, then, you know, those guys are gone. It's a great tackle draft if you're in the top 10 or top 15. But if you're in picking 32 and 64, you've got a shot. And then talked about, you know, what they would do with guys that might be worth a move. So there's a lot there on where he views the top tackles are 10 to 15, which tells me that if there's a tackle somewhere that they think should be gone in the top 15, and he's there around 20, 21, 22, like McDuffie, that would be something they would consider making a move for. And sitting at 32, as he's saying, you've got a shot, because 32 to 40 is sort of that pocket, which also could mean maybe there's a trade back if they're sitting there and there's a couple of guys that are available and they're going, well, these guys are still in this pocket of tackles that we like in the top 40 or so or something like that. We can still trade back and get one of these two or three guys. We're good with any of these three guys if they're on the board there. We're going to trade back four spots. Not everybody's going to take a tackle because maybe this team took a tackle the first round or whatever. So we feel confident we can get one of these three guys there before pick 40. But after that, it's pretty much done, which tells me that if the Chiefs are looking for tackle, they need to do it in the first round.
Well, and that was my main takeaway, was it's a deep wide receiver class, mm-hmm. and it's a solid tackle class until a certain point. And then my main thought was, I think the same as yours, where if you want a tackle and you want a starting caliber left tackle, it's a trade up. And that means mm-hmm. if the Chiefs are to trade up, it's probably not going to be for a wide receiver. It's probably not going to be for a cornerback. It's not going to be for a defensive lineman. It would be for a tackle. That was my main takeaway. Yeah. If all of a sudden you see the Chiefs trading up and you're do-do-do, and it's like 22, right? You're now on the clock.
Mm-hmm. Ding-ding-ding-ding-ding, whatever
Thank
it is.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. I
was trying to think of
completely butchered. Yep. For some reason, mine was like an off-brand ESPN Sports Center. But yeah. It's going to be for a tackle. That was my thought process. If a trade-up is going to happen for Kansas City, it will be for a tackle, not for a wide receiver.
I think Sterling will share this idea that I have, because you're a big fan of Wanya Morris. But if they are to trade up, use resources to get an offensive tackle in the first round, not that the Wanya Morris pick becomes useless, because he's still a swing tackle, somebody can mm-hmm. get banged up, he has to come in. But man, I kind of feel like you've abandoned the development at that point, because Wanya Morris wasn't a sixth round pick or a seventh round pick. He was a day two pick. And you know, he did play a little bit last year. But if the plan is you're going to get your starting left tackle in the first round, I just don't know if there is a true great starting left tackle, even in the 20s. I think if you are to draft a tackle in the first round for them to be a day one starter, you're probably going to have to be in the top 15, which the Chiefs just simply can't move up that high. So to me, I don't know if it makes too much sense to empty resources to go up to get a guy that maybe still has to win the job in camp, yeah. right? If you're going to move up, use resources to get a tackle in the first round, I would like to say they are penciled in day one starter. Don't even worry about Wanya Morris.
They better be.
But, yeah.
If you're going to spend that the resources it would take, as you're saying, yeah. to get up to 15 to draft somebody, they're a day one starter.
Yeah. yeah.
It can't be anything else.
And I just don't know if there is that guy mm-hmm. outside of even the top 10 at this point. So for me, I still feel like the Chiefs view Wanya Morris as the guy that can go into camp and win that job. Maybe you do get competition for him, but I just don't know if it makes sense to use kind of the limited resources you have to move up to get a guy that I do not believe would be a locked-in day one starter.
Well, it's one of the things I've talked about Kingsley Suamataia before so many times, is because he's a guy that has the traits to be a starting left tackle. He's more of a developmental guy. And if you come out of the draft with your first round pick, or maybe you trade back and get him early second round, and then you sign Donovan Smith, and then Wanya can be your swing tackle still developing while your first rounder is developing, and you don't feel like, well, Wanya or Kingsley have to start day number one because those are the options we have. Or Lucas Niang, those are the options we have. Donovan Smith did it
Prince
last year.
Tega Winogo, sir.
Yeah, that's a good point. Prince is there. They do like Prince. You know, PTG or PTW.
PTW.
PTW. Yeah, PTW. They do like Prince. And, you know,
who doesn't like Prince?
I know, right?
Little Red Corvette. It's great.
Right. I mean,
1999.
They were purple raining all over the Ravens.
Let's go crazy.
That's what they were doing without Prince. Didn't even need him that night. But it's, and they made, you know, the Ravens / Doves cry. So we move past that. They like him. But if Donovan Smith is somebody you sign after the draft, if you get somebody, it doesn't even have to be Kingsley. It could be somebody else that they view that might take a little bit of time. You might have some frustration that's there because it's like, well, your first-round draft pick last year, you know, took some time in developmental. Yeah, you're picking 32nd. You're not picking top 10. If you're picking top 10 and take Joe Walt, he's your starting left tackle right now. Like, the mini camp, hey, you're the starting left tackle. But that's just not reality that they're living in right now, because they're living in the reality of a dynasty, which is a fantastic spot to be in. But it means that your first-round draft pick is not going to immediately come in, be a starter, be a day-one starter, and a huge, impactful player. They've got a couple of those guys. Trent McDuffie, certainly, even though he got injured game number one. But he's been a guy that, since he's hit the field, he's been a really good player. Karlaftis, since he hit the field, especially at pick 30, you know, he's been a really productive and good player for this team. They've got some guys like that, but, you know, typically it's going to be the ones that develop a little bit and take a little bit of time to where they start to really get going and start to, you know, find their footing in the NFL.
And I think you really find, in today's day and age, you want the immediate satisfaction. It's way more fun when you see a rookie come out and just tear it up. You're like, oh, we got this guy for 4 more years, 3 more years, whatever it is. But not everyone comes out and is ready game one, week one for the NFL. It is a massive, massive jump. How many players, their rookie seasons, even sometimes their sophomore year, where they struggle and then all of a sudden they turn into a great player? Right now, though, it's the immediate satisfaction of wanting a guy to be a stud. I know Peyton Manning's the obvious answer of going back, but I talked to Jared Goff the other day and I said, you would have been labeled as a bust your first. Yeah, I would have been a bust. But luckily, I got time to develop, and now look at him in Detroit. He's been, I think, one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the NFL right now. I know we all want FAU to be a stud game one, and he wasn't, obviously, but that's why I'm not worried about him. It's why I think some people, I think, Jack, you're kind of alluding to the same thing. Everyone wanted Wanya Morris to be the guy, this third-round stud starting tackle right away. It takes time. Let him develop. Why have we already given up on guys? Let them mold and grow from college, from college into the NFL. It's hard.
Let's hear from Brett Veach on the wide receiver class. So we talked about the offensive line there, and you know, we mentioned offensive line, wide receiver. If it's not one of those positions, then maybe it's something else. Where do you find value, like a cornerback or defensive line? They have some, quote, interesting pockets that he said in that clip. But here he is talking about the wide receiver class.
I think it's one of the deeper classes. The good thing about the wide receiver position, this is typically every year, is they provide – depth really 1 through 5, and there's always, you know, pockets of players. I think there's a large group of receivers in the first 50 picks, I think, that we have great grades on. And then I think there's another pocket right behind that. I think that is a positive. I think, you know, corner, there's some depth, you know, middle to later on in the draft. O-lineman, as I mentioned in the opener, it's really good early, and so there'll be a late run on those guys, but it tails off a little bit. I think it's a better defensive line class than we've seen in the past. I think there's some good mid-round depth there. You know, linebacker, running back's probably a little lighter than years past. So I think O-line, receivers, corners are good hot spots throughout the draft, and that's a good thing because we can use one of each of those.
So, again, good information there, and they like to use the term pockets quite often. And said the, you know, I do agree with him when he's talking about wide receivers, and he's saying, you know, typically every year it's a good draft for wide receivers, because that's just what we're seeing now. The best athletes on the field in high school and junior high, whatever, put them at quarterback. Like, that was always what you did. Best athlete, he plays quarterback. Then they get to college and probably do something else. Then they get to the NFL and do something else, right? Now your best athlete, you're putting him a wide receiver and cornerback. because you are, it's the spread offense. It's the, you know, more of a faster paced game. So you're seeing way more higher developed guys entering the NFL draft than you ever did at the wide receiver spot, which makes them both at the same time more valuable and less valuable, because more valuable in that you better have one, because other teams are going to have one because they're starting to become a little bit saturated, but also less valuable because they're starting to become a little bit, you know, saturated. You still have your high-end guys like your Jamar Chases and Justin Jeffersons, but you have more guys coming into the league that are skilled players that have been doing it for a long time. But when he talks about the first 50 picks that they've got grades on, and then there's a pocket behind that. So, I mean, if they're sitting there at number 32... like, it feels like it's an either. If they don't trade back, it feels like it's an either or. Because if they're sitting there at 32, they obviously don't have another pick in the top 50. The next pick is at 64. If they draft at 32, I don't think they have the enough ammo to move from 64 into the top 50. I don't think they should probably even do that. But if you trade back from 32 and pick up an extra third rounder or something like that, then you could package your second and that third rounder to move up and take somebody else that might be in the top 50. Now you're getting a tackle and a wide receiver that you feel like were the top end parts of the pockets that you had. I don't know if that's going to be the case because you need two to tango, but when he talks about wide receivers, some grades on the first 50 picks, they've got good grades on. But then he mentioned the cornerback depth in the middle to late rounds and the defensive line depths in the mid round and late round, that's where he talked about tackle and wide receiver at the top, cornerback and defensive line in the middle to late rounds.
I was going to say, for you guys, what's the trade back reality even look like? I know we keep talking about trade backs, and I think we all would love a trade back at 32 to try and get more value, mm-hmm. right? But last year they couldn't do it with Will Levis, a quarterback on the board. That fifth-year option seemingly is not quite as valuable as it once was, just with the rookie contracts, the way they are, with the ability to franchise tag players, all that stuff. It just seems like if they could not do it last year, as much as we all want that, and Jack, I don't know your thoughts here, are we talking about something that quite frankly is almost impossible?
I don't know if it's impossible when you look at trading back. I think what's going to come down to, because from what we've heard from Brett Veach so far, I just get this sense that it would be wide receiver number one, just because I don't think you're getting a starting offensive tackle, as we talked about, you know, in the 20s, or even, you know, you trade back in the second round and take a tackle, they're going to be a developmental project. They're not going to be a day one starter. For a wide receiver, though, I mean, we've seen some mocks where Jalen Polk went to Kansas City, Malachi Corley went to Kansas City. Those are guys I do feel like are going to be there in day two. I don't see anybody reaching in the first round, but if you look at somebody like Brian Thomas sliding back a little bit, or maybe A.D. Mitchell slides back a little bit, and then you've got your pick of the litter at 32. Maybe you just stay in that spot. But, you know, if you see some of those top guys go off the board like they did last year, like 20, 21, 22, 23, I don't think it'll be four straight wide receivers like it was in last year's draft. But if you get to that point where, you know, Malachi Corley's still available, Jalen Polk's going to be available day two, I would see at that point you could just trade back. Because we all know the 32nd pick, even though it's labeled as a first-round pick, and that kind of, I think, as you said with Felix Anudike Uzomah, we are so quick to label them busts because they are a first-round pick. They're really a second-round pick. They're that close to the second round. They are a day-two pick, in my opinion. And if you get to that point where the top guys in the wide receiver class are gone, I would say you could trade out of that first-round pick and get a couple of day-two picks, or maybe just one day-two pick, and then you'd have that flexibility of maybe moving up in the second round and getting that guy you wanted.
I also am of the mindset that no matter what Clark Hunt said in his discussions before the draft last year, when he said, well, if it makes sense for the team, yeah, I mean, we aren't required to select. The draft is still going to be in Kansas City, whether we make a selection or not. That if it makes more sense for the team, we'll trade back. I don't think there was a snowball's chance in hell that Clark Hunt was allowing Brett Veach to trade back in the draft. Just my opinion, my theory. And so maybe the Titans were trying to trade up to 31 with the Chiefs to get Will Levis, because they traded up to 33. They moved from 40 to 33 to get Will Levis, trading with, I think it was Arizona. So they had to move up to get Will Levis in the second pick of the second round, because Joey Porter Jr. was going to the Steelers. They didn't have to trade with the Steelers because the Steelers had a quarterback in Kenny Pickett. So they traded right behind the Steelers and with a team that already had a quarterback in Kyler Murray and got Will Levis. They swapped third rounders and they picked up a third rounder in this draft this year. So maybe that was on the table for the Chiefs to move back, move up in the third round, and then pick up a 2024 third rounder as well. But Clark Hunt was over my dead body. We're walking out there, we're putting in a card, and we're selecting somebody with the draft in Kansas City with those three Lombardi trophies up there. We are going to pick somebody, and that extra third rounder next year ain't worth it. It's not worth it to me, and it's not going to be such a sizable, impactful shift for this organization than what it means tonight for the storylines overall. I don't know if that was available to them. I have no idea. Maybe the Tennessee called, and they're like, yeah, we need more to move back from 31 to 40-something. That's a huge drop for us when we've got some guys here that we like. And they might not have been offering more than just exchanging third-rounders, so you move up in the third round, and you pick up an extra third-rounder. Maybe there wouldn't be that. I don't know. Maybe Will Levis was on the board for the Titans that they wanted to move up and get him, and the Chiefs were not answering phone calls from somebody at pick number 30, unless they were blown away by the trade, and it was like, all right, the storyline's great, but they're giving us a second. They're giving us an extra second rounder, you know, and a third rounder next year. I'm sorry. Sorry, Clark. In fact, ooh, what's that over there? Make the trade. Oh, Clark, look over there. It's Taylor Swift. She's not even supposed to be here. I'm just looking ahead. Shut up.
It's a ruse. It's just a ruse.
Yeah.
No, I get what you're saying. That's definitely possible. And also the Titans maybe said, well, the Chiefs aren't taking a quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no reason to trade up to 31.
There's no reason to trade up to 31.
Yeah.
It might cost too much just to get the hypothetical of the mm-hmm. first round, as you're saying, that fifth year. Yeah, I'm just, as much as I want the Chiefs to trade back, if I had my druthers, uh-huh. that's what I want the Chiefs to do. I just don't know, again, the realistic possibility of the Chiefs getting that done.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. Absolutely. And if they were able to do that, if they somehow got two picks in the top 50, that'd be great. You trade back to, you know, 38, 39, and then you trade 64, with package it with whatever pick that you got this year, or maybe package it with next year's third rounder for Snead, and you get an offensive tackle and a wide receiver in the top 50 when he's talked about, you know, 32, 35 or 40 is where those tackles are going to be gone. Past 35 or 40, tackles are going to be gone. And the wide receiver pocket of their top group outside of, like, you know, the first round grades with guys are the first 50 picks. So if they can find a way to do that, then I think they'd be maneuvering the board, which is what closely resembles to a degree of what at least he's presenting publicly. You know, let's hear from Brett Veach on this clip. Now let's play clip number 5, because this goes along with teams with the trades and things like that. He's talking about teams not trading with the Chiefs.
Yes and no. I think that if a team, if it can benefit them, I think they're always going to pick up the phone and call and be willing to work. I don't think a team is going to, you know, diminish their ability to do something they really want to do just because it's the Chiefs. I do think, though, that the ability to deal with certain teams, I mean, it's always been understood that if you're going to deal with a team in your division, there's a little bit more of a premium. But I think just some of the AFC teams in general that are consistent playoff performers, I mean, the Buffaloes and the Cincinnati's and the Baltimore's, I mean, it's probably a little bit harder to deal with those teams. And even if they do pick up the phone, I think some of their asking prices are a tick higher. So I think we get hit with a little bit more interest. But I think that there's always a way to make a deal. But I think certain teams will probably up the price up a little bit.
I like the line there. You get hit with more interest when it's those teams. I think it's absurd that teams would be, you know, maybe it's a, okay, we want a little bit more because you're the Chiefs. But I think it's pretty dumb to not trade with the Chiefs if it's beneficial to your team. I thought about that when people were discussing, you know, Orlando Brown, and I was lobbying for the Chiefs to trade for Orlando Brown. I thought it could help with the left tackle spot for a couple of years, and could be a guy that can play at a Pro Bowl level at left tackle. He was fine for the Chiefs for the couple of years he was there, but so much pushback was the Ravens are never going to trade with the Chiefs. The Ravens are going to trade with the Chiefs. Why would you make the Chiefs better? Because you feel like it makes you better. Like, you don't want to shoot yourself in both feet just so you can point at the Chiefs and go, ha-ha, we shot you in your foot, too. Yeah, but I can still hop on the other one. Like, you dumbass. Like, you didn't. This is best for us, but it'll help the Chiefs. So screw them. We're not going to do it. Ha-ha! Like, that just seems such a loser's mentality.
Yeah.
Now, if you say, yeah, we'll trade with you, it's going to be a touch higher. You know, if it typically would have been a sixth-round pick, maybe it's a fifth-rounder next year, you know, that we need out of this trade. But if it makes sense for them, to me, it really shouldn't matter who the team is as long as you feel like it's making you better. But if I was the Bills, I wouldn't even answer the phone from the Chiefs. I would never answer the phone. It's the Chiefs. Hang up.
Let it ring 13 seconds.
Yeah, try it.
Let it ring.
And then they pick up the phone and they're getting a trade request and the call is coming from inside the war room. What? They've been inside the war room the whole time. Call is coming from inside the house.
I've agreed with you, though, for the most part of I think we overreact sometimes. The teams aren't going to trade with the Chiefs. It's like, well, it's going to cost more, as Veach is alluding to, but you want to make your team better. The Ravens were in competition with the Chiefs at that point. They still said, well, why would we not want to make our team better? This is the best offer we have for Orlando Brown Jr. He does not fit into our plans. What are we going to do? Keep him and have this malcontent at this point on our team and not pick up the draft capital? Like, no, there's always going to be instances where teams want to make their team better. The Steelers, to an extent, didn't make a lot of sense when they came out. I forget who it was. Was it Diontae Johnson or there was some, whatever it was. I think it was a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, we didn't want to trade with the Chiefs. Deontay. And you're like, well, first off, you're
at
not even in competition.
The report,
like, allegedly. Yeah. Sorry. You're not even in competition with the Chiefs. You're in competition to not be the worst team in the AFC.
Right. You don't even have a quarterback. You're trying to figure that out.
That's what bad teams do.
Yeah.
That was my point, was bad teams do stuff like that. Good teams do not.
I think I could be in the minority here, but I even think if a deal made Buffalo better, I still don't think they'd pull the trigger. I mean, if it
I agree. I think that they don't ever trade with the Chiefs again.
No. Like, if Stephon Diggs, that story was true, that it was,
right.
No, we're not even answering the phone. You know, I think it goes back to a little bit. One, the Chiefs have tortured them in the playoffs. Like, I don't know if it's an exact equivalent, but I'd imagine, you know, if this Tyreek Hill trade would have happened a few years earlier, like right after the Chiefs lost in New England in the AFC title game, they traded Tyreek Hill to New England. And New England gave them a boatload of picks, first-round picks, maybe a star player in there, but the Chiefs gave Tyreek Hill to the Patriots. I think it's one of those things that, one, would not sit well with your fan base whatsoever. Like, even if the Chiefs had offered up some good pieces for Stephon Diggs, I think Buffalo would never be able to forgive the front office, because it's like, this is the team that's beat us three times in the playoffs, and one guy, even though he supposedly had been a little bit of a headache, it's like he was one of the main pieces of this Buffalo team that went head-to-head with Kansas City. You can't trade him to this villainous team.
But you know what solves that? You win! If you
not trading away Patrick Mahomes in 2017
but
in the draft?
But winning would solve all that. You think it's stupid. You win. No one gives a hoot.
Yeah. It is a great point, because it made it easier and more palatable in the two teams the Chiefs were deciding between to trade Tyreek Hill to, or the Jets and the Dolphins.
Yeah.
A little bit easier rather than, you know, the
Cincinnati.
Well, Cincinnati at that time. Well, yeah, that's right. They just lost to Cincinnati. So it wasn't the Patriots or Bengals or something like that, right? It wasn't one of those teams that you're trading it to, and maybe you trade him to the Patriots and Tom Brady stays around, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't, unless he was already with Tampa Bay at that time. Not specifically in the season, because they had just lost with Brady in the playoffs, but I don't know when he ultimately went to Tampa Bay. Was it before the Tyreek Hill trade or not in the weeks before? But I don't know. Maybe he stays there, or maybe the relationship was broken and severed. Whatever. It does make it a little bit easier. They're like, Miami? Okay. They got Tua. The Jets? Okay. They got Mormon Mahomes, not the real Mahomes. So I think they're fine.
The Chiefs to the Bills are the ball, or the Tampa Bay Rays to the rest of Major League Baseball. It's like, what do they see in this guy? Why are they asking about this dude?
I do wonder if that's a part of it. If, like, okay, the Chiefs are trying to trade for this guy, or the Chiefs are trying to trade up in the draft for, okay, what are we missing here?
Yeah.
All right. I think there's an element of the Rays that when the Rays come calling about a draft, about a prospect or something, maybe take a closer look at that prospect. What are they seeing in that guy that others are not seeing in that guy? What are they going to do with him that maybe you aren't able to do with him? All right. The Chiefs are wanting to trade up at pick 22. Who is there that they are going to trade up for, and why don't we have this guy higher on our board?
And then it's sabotage. You call about guys you don't want, and those guys you do want drop.
Yeah. But that's also like when Brett Veach talked about, I don't think we're going to play the clip, but when he talked about the, working the phones before, like, this is the time you're working the phones and you're calling and setting things up and just sort of bouncing ideas off each other GMs and things like that, just to see where they're at and what the possibility of moving up looks like, because, you know, when it gets to about 18, 19, 20, then it's more reasonably in play, as opposed to the phones aren't really going to be working for the Chiefs until like pick 15. Then at that time, you're like, all right, now let's reassess the board because there's no reason to call anybody before pick 15.
It's almost never the guy that's like number one or number two on Mel Kiper's draft board. Like, I remember vividly when they traded up for McDuffie. I thought they were trading up for Jermaine Johnson.
Jermaine Johnson.
I was like, that is the guy they're going to get. Everybody's like, oh, they need an edge rusher. Here's who it's going to be.
Yep.
And then it was McDuffie. And I'll be honest, at the time, I knew who McDuffie was, but I'm like, really? That's who they traded up to go get? And now he's a blue-chip guy and one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. Like, that, I think, is the more fearing part for a lot of teams in the NFL is when they trade up, it's not the, oh, they're probably going for this guy. It's always somebody that is maybe a couple more spots down and may not be the biggest position of need for them. I would say cornerback was a need at that point, but they also still had a lot of guys there that had been starters the year before, I believe, at that
point. They still had Snead.
Snead and Fenton, too.
Yeah, Snead and Fenton was there because Ward had already signed with the 49ers at that point. So they had Snead and Fenton, and then DeAndre Baker was a guy that was like, oh, he's got a little bit of, you know, his former first-round draft pick.
Mike Hughes.
Yeah.
There were pieces.
Yeah, there were at least guys that just said if you didn't go cornerback, because if McDuffie wasn't there, they wouldn't have taken a cornerback in the first round.
Correct.
I don't know what they would. Maybe they would have taken Elam. Or, well, I guess they wouldn't have because Buffalo ended up taking him that.
But. Rashad Breeland. Wasn't there talk at the time of potentially bringing him? It doesn't matter now, obviously. But.
Yeah. Maybe. But, yeah, they had pieces there, which is like, you know, when he talks about if the offensive line or a tackle and wide receiver spot is not there, well, you know, what's the value in other positions like a cornerback or a defensive line? Those are the two positions he mentioned specifically. He didn't mention running back, though. That was interesting. I'm just joking. I think this is the year that breaks the record for the lowest drafted running back. I think 2014 was pick 54. Bishop Sankey was the highest drafted running back in 2014.
Stud.
Yeah, that draft class.
Name.
That draft class wasn't all that great. It was like McKinnon, James White, and Devontae Freeman, I think, were the running backs in that. And they were all like third and sixth and, you know, round picks.
All three are kicking it right now, right?
Yeah, still good, yeah. But there's a lot of like, who? Oh, I remember that guy. Really? Oh, that guy? Really? Yeah. So there's a reason why the running backs didn't go until like late second round. And there's a little bit of that this year, too. We'll find out. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. I want to hear from Brett Veach. He was on the Kevin Harvick podcast. And we'll play a couple of clips from that, including the one guy he thinks about that was the biggest miss in his career as a general manager in the draft. We'll do that next. We'll talk with Josh Kaiser coming up at noon. One Royal Way podcast. Get his thoughts on the Kansas City Royals. They get ready for the Toronto Blue Jays. They lose the series to the Orioles over the weekend, dropping 2 of 3. They win Friday night. Can't get it done in a comeback fashion on Saturday, and just never really there yesterday in just one of those professional beatdowns of a, it wouldn't be. They're just a professional win where you just go in, and it's one of those, 50, 60 games that you're going to win or lose throughout a season, and they lose 5-0. So we'll talk with Josh Kaiser about that. Royals moving forward, getting ready for the Blue Jays in these 4 games. 913-912-4810. Let's hear from Brett Veach. If you were to ask what, and I've already mentioned this a couple times, so we know the answer, what's the player that Chiefs fans talk so much about in the draft that the Chiefs passed up on with Brett Veach? I mean, it's one name constantly. We joke about if Brett Veach wins 5 more Super Bowls and he's got 8 on his resume, like the first line of his, obituary is, passed up on DK Metcalf to take Mecole Hardman. Brett Veach also was a big part of drafting Patrick Mahomes and won 8 Super Bowls with the Chiefs, but the main thing would be like, oh, how did you pass up on DK Metcalf for Mecole Hardman? So here's Brett Veach. He was on the Kevin Harvick podcast, and this is clip number 14. Brett Veach, Kevin Harvick podcast. He was asked about, are there any guys, players that stick out in your mind that you look back on that still stay with you that you missed on?
I think there are some guys that if you miss on guys, DK Metcalf might be a guy that stands out just because the limited pass tree. I think there were some injury concerns. And sometimes I think what you learn through the process, especially with these injuries, and I'm fortunate that we have a great training staff and Rick Burkholder, our trainer, we've been together for a long time. But our relationship was different when I was a scout as opposed to GM and just understanding and learning the terminology. But I think sometimes getting clarification on injury status and the likelihood of someone making the contract. I mean, sometimes, you know, you don't take guys and fans do the mock drafts and they go through them and they're like, well, we should have taken this, like years later, we should have taken this guy or that guy. But at the time, a player could have been off your board because you had character concerns or an injury concern. And so I think looking back on DK, like he had, there was areas that we weren't sure on, but there was none maybe that should have prompted us to bypass that. And I think that's one player that sticks out. And I'm sure there's a ton other, and I think every team is probably the same way. I'm sure there's a lot of teams that were too low on Pat Mahomes and saying that quarterbacks from the Texas Tech air raid style of offense don't work out. So I think every team has it, and I think it's useful because you learn stuff from why you didn't select a guy at the time. And, you know, it's been helpful for me. Sometimes the big misses help you grow into a better GM, and you're better off for it in the long run.
It's easy to do that if your big miss is not a quarterback, right? If you don't miss on the quarterback, they've got the quarterback right. So when looking back, it's interesting there because the assumption has been made, and I've just held it to be sort of the assumption is true, in that you trade up to get Mecole Hardman because he was the closest skill set match to what Tyreek Hill offered to your offense, and you didn't know about Tyreek Hill. So it's always sort of like, okay, you put an asterisk next to that trade by Brett Veach to get up and get Mecole Hardman past DK Metcalf because they didn't need DK Metcalf. They had Sammy Watkins. They needed the Tyreek Hill guy. And without Tyreek Hill, then, you know, Mecole Hardman fills that role. But he didn't mention at any point talking about DK Metcalf of, you know, different circumstances going on in our club at the time to where, you know, maybe we looked at him a little bit differently than what we were looking for. Like, that would have been very easy to sort of include in that clip, in that answer, which would be alluding to Tyreek Hill of what's going on there. But he said limited route tree and some injury concerns that were there, and then talked about, you know, obviously people look back and do the mock drafts and go, you should have taken that guy or that guy. And he's like, well, at the time, you know, these are the issues. But then his statement of almost being like regretful in that there were no concerns. There were none that should have prompted us to bypass him. None that were big enough that should have prompted us to bypass him. And you learn from those things. And I don't know if they've taken somebody that's helped the Chiefs now that they got by not taking DK Met. Was Rashee Rice a guy with a limited route tree? And they went, you know, we passed on DK because of that. And we get him in here. He'll learn how to do those things. Maybe we do go Rashee Rice and we aren't beholden to these are the coloring inside the lines and you can't deviate from that at all. I thought that was interesting looking back of the, there was nothing that should have prompted us to bypass him. There was nothing big enough to where we should have bypassed that guy, moved past him and taken Mecole Hardman.
That means Xavier Leggett, come on down.
That's exactly right. That's the only way you can read into that, right? It's the only thing to read into that.
I thought learning through the process and understanding medicals better, because he talked about how from a scout to a GM, there's a big jump in just understanding terminology and just what is and what does not take a guy off the board. And I wonder if that also played in the part of them not missing on Trey Smith. Right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I wonder if they go, okay, we look too far into the medicals. And that's, again, what happens as a GM. Early on, you want to make sure you don't mess up at all, right? When you start winning Super Bowls, you have a little more leeway. Maybe you can take a little more risk. And again, obviously, second round versus sixth round, going to be a lot different. But they didn't miss on Trey Smith. They at least tried, again, not a draft pick, but brought in Justin Ross. Has not worked, but they at least brought him in. I'm trying to think of other players that have maybe had some injury concerns that they've changed their thought process on. Obviously, I wonder, you know, George Pickens is the other name that's going to come up to mind. If you said you learned on DK Metcalf with the route tree and some of the,
well, that might have been
not
character
medicals,
concerns.
But character.
Yeah. And then Pickens' character concerns, maybe that helped with a little bit with Rashee Rice.
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe there are a couple of things with Rashee Rice that were like, there's some character concerns. There's some route running. He's more of a guy that finds zones, and he can be a jump ball guy. Like, you know, hey, you know what? We did this with DK, and we did this with George Pickens, and those guys turned out to be pretty damn good wide receivers. So, you know, maybe we you know, look a little more deeper in this to see if these are enough to prompt us to bypass him, let alone trade up to get him.
The best thing is that his first draft was the worst draft.
Yeah.
He's gotten progressively better since he's grown as a GM, and I think that's all you can ask for, right? If he started off hot and then he starts tapering off, then you go, okay, he got lucky. No, this to me is a guy who has a game plan. He's learned from the process. He's stuck to it, and he's still improving in the draft process.
He wouldn't have a job if his best draft was Breland Speaks.
Correct, yes.
Would be fired pretty quickly.
I don't get too upset about the DK Metcalf miss too much because, one, it was a day two pick. A lot of other teams I kind of passed on it. Wasn't there something about, you know, at the combine, it was like the shuttle or the cone drill that wasn't good?
He doesn't move very well. He's a straight line runner.
Yes. And so that like popped up and I was like, well, he's still this big hulking wide receiver, true number one. And I guess I don't get too upset because when was the last wide receiver, with the exception of Jonathan Baldwin, the Chiefs drafted, that was this 6'4" freak that was a one-on-one, you know, jump ball guy? Like, it was always the smaller, better route runners, good hands. Not saying Hardman or Sky Moore had that, but they identify the guys that they like. And when you win so much, it's like, how at the time could you have ripped your hair out for it? Because it had worked. Tyreek Hill, though he had fallen in the draft because of the off-field stuff, but a smaller-bodied, fast, route-running wide receiver with good hands. Then you get to Hardman, it was like the same thing. And then after Hardman, it was Sky Moore. So at the time, I wasn't too upset about it because DK Metcalf never fit that profile. Well, it is cool to see Brett Veach say, hey, I did miss on that. I regret that. And that is cool to see because that's like every Chiefs fan's biggest regret as well. It was DK Metcalf instead of Mecole Hardman. And I guess Veach acknowledges that. But to me, it was like, when was the last time the Chiefs went after a wide receiver like that? Like with Xavier Leggett, it would be awesome because he kind of fits that profile. But like Rashee Rice is the only big-bodied wide receiver, and he's 6'2". So it's not like he was the 6'4", 6'5". Like, wow, he really stands out on the depth chart.
And I think one other thing as we go to break, I think one other thing is, you know, he's won 3 Super Bowls since that draft. So it does make it a little bit easier, and it does make it a little bit easier to digest as a Chiefs fan for him to admit and go, was there anybody that sticks out? Well, I think DK Metcalf, you know, to actually name somebody, because how many GMs would have gone, well, there's always guys that are there and guys that you feel like you could have drafted and everything, but that's every GM. You know, we've got our process and we trust what we've done throughout the years, and any fan after the fact can go and point out different guys.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see Ryan Pace doing any Mahomes flashbacks anytime soon.
Ryan. Anybody you may have missed?
Anybody you overlooked?
And that's what Brett Veach was saying. Well, hell, ask Ryan Pace about that because I bet a lot of people thought Patrick Mahomes wasn't a enough player.
John Lynch is saying that too. He's saying, please ask Ryan Pace about trading up for a quarterback that's really bad.
Ask him. Ooh, look over there. All right, wrapping up this hour. A lot of Chiefs talk here in this hour. A lot of Royals talk in the first hour. We'll talk with Josh Kizer coming up at noon. Mick Schaefer will join us in the 1 o'clock hour. Jack, you're heading to Wichita?
I am.
Safe travels, buddy.
Yeah, private jet waiting
safe travels
outside in the parking lot.
From here to there. Safe travels in those 15 feet to get there. Get there safely, that's all. Watch out, there's a speed trap right there. Right there.
Do you need my arm? Like, we can go arm in arm if you need some help.
My walker's over there.
The walker's over here. Okay.
Perfect. That's perfect
stuff.
Thanks,
young lad.
Thank you, Jack. We continue rolling along here on this Monday edition of the show. We'll play some more Veach clips coming up later on in the noon hour. Mick Schaefer will join us in the 1 o'clock hour. We got Learn Funniest Best that we'll get into today. Boy, I learned a few things over the weekend, which is nice because typically I don't really learn at all. So it's a nice change.